Thank you, Keelan. This is the Wednesday, June 9th, 2021 afternoon session of the Portland City Council. Good afternoon, everyone. Keelan, welcome back. Please call the roll.
Good afternoon, Mayor and members of Council. Ryan.
Here.
Hardesty.
Here.
Max.
Here.
Rubio.
Here.
Wheeler.
Here. Under Portland City Code and State Law, the City Council is holding this meeting electronically. All members of the council are attending remotely by video and teleconference, and the city has made several avenues available to the public to listen to the audio broadcast of this meeting. The meeting is available to the public on the city's YouTube channel, eGovPDEX, www.portlandoregon.gov/video, and channel 30. The public can also provide written testimony to the council by emailing the council clerk at cctestimony@portlandoregon.gov. The council is taking these steps as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic and the need to limit in-person contact and to promote physical distancing. The pandemic is an emergency that threatens the public health, safety, and welfare, which requires us to meet remotely by electronic communications. As always, thank you for your continued patience, your flexibility, and your understanding as we manage through these difficult circumstances to conduct the city's business. And with that, we'll hear from legal counsel on the rules of order and decorum. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. To participate in council meetings, you may sign up in advance with the council clerk's office for communications to briefly speak about any subject. You may also sign up for public testimony on resolutions or the first readings of ordinances. The published council agenda at portlandoregon.gov/auditor contains information about how and when you may sign up for testimony while the city council is holding electronic meetings. Your testimony should address the matter being considered at the time. When testifying, please state your name for the record. Your address is not necessary. Please disclose if you are a lobbyist. If you are representing an organization, please identify it. The presiding officer determines the length of testimony. Individuals generally have 3 minutes to testify unless otherwise stated. When your time is up, the presiding officer will ask you to conclude. Disruptive conduct such as shouting, refusing to conclude your testimony when your time is up, or interrupting others' testimony or council deliberations will not be allowed. If there are disruptions, a warning will be given that further disruption may result in the person being placed on hold or ejected from the remainder of the meeting. Please be aware all council meetings are recorded. Thanks, Mayor.
Thank you. All right, so we have one subject area this afternoon. That's the city budget. Keelan, could you please read items 442 through 446, please?
442, conduct a proposed use hearing on state shared revenue. 443, certify that certain services are provided by the city to establish eligibility for state shared revenues. 444, approve accepting funds from the state of Oregon under the state revenue sharing program for the fiscal year beginning July 1, 2021 and ending June 30, 2022. 445, adopt the annual budget of the city and establish appropriations for the fiscal year beginning July 1, 2021 and ending June 30, 2022. And 446, approve levying taxes for the city for the fiscal year beginning July 1, 2021 and ending June 30, 2022.
Thanks, Keelan. Good afternoon, colleagues, and welcome. Today, we take the final series of steps and necessary votes as part of the adoption of the fiscal year 2021-22 budget as prescribed by Oregon budget law. I'll turn it over to Budget Director Jessica Kennard to walk us through the many steps that are in front of us today.
Yes, thank you, Mayor, and good afternoon, Council. For the record, my name is Jessica Kennard. I'm the city's budget director. As the mayor mentioned, we're here today to adopt the budget for fiscal year 21-22. As usual, there are a number of procedural steps we need to go through. And as Keelan read into the record, we have 5 items in front of you as part of this process. The first 3 items relate to the acceptance and use of state shared revenues in our budget. We start off with a proposed use hearing on state shared revenue. Next, council considers a resolution certifying the city meets the eligible requirements of state shared revenue. And finally, council considers an ordinance accepting the state shared revenue. The 4th item council will consider today is the adopted budget ordinance. This is the item that generates the most interest and is likely to be the focus of our time together today. The fifth and final item council will consider today is an ordinance levying taxes. With that overview, we can begin with our first item, the state shared revenue hearing. Mayor, you can now read the statement into the record for the state shared revenue hearing.
I am now opening a hearing to discuss proposed uses of state revenue sharing. This hearing is being held by the City Council of Portland, Oregon, in compliance with the provisions of the State Revenue Sharing Regulations, ORS 221.770. It's to allow citizens to comment on the possible use of these funds in conjunction with the annual budget process. As proposed for council adoption, the fiscal year 2021-22 budget anticipates receipts totaling $24,755,746 from state revenue sharing under ORS 221.770. As has been the case in prior years, it's proposed that this revenue be allocated in equal parts to support fire prevention and police patrol services. Is there anyone here today present who wishes to be heard on the subject?
Keelan, did anyone sign up?
The sign up for testimony this year was for the budget adoption package as a whole. I think we can ask if anybody wants to raise their hand to speak specifically about this one. I don't see anyone raising their hand.
Very good. I'm now closing this hearing to discuss proposed uses of state revenue sharing. Director Kennard, I'll turn it over to you for the next item.
Thank you, Mayor. Next, Council considers a resolution to certify that the city meets the eligibility requirements for state shared revenue. State law requires that we provide a number of services to be eligible for the state shared revenue, and this resolution certifies that we do so. The services certified by the City of Portland are police protection, fire protection, street construction, maintenance and lighting, sanitary sewers, storm sewers, planning, zoning, and subdivision control, and water. Back over to you, Mayor.
Keelan, is there any testimony on the resolution?
I'm not seeing anyone raising their hands for this item.
Very good. Colleagues, any further questions on the resolution? Seeing none, please call the roll.
Ryan.
Aye.
Hardesty.
Aye.
Maps.
Aye.
Rubio.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. The resolution passes. Next, Director Kennard.
So this is now the third and final step in accepting the state shared revenue. It's for council to consider and vote upon an ordinance to accept the revenue. Now that we have held the hearing and certified that we are qualified, we just need to take this action to accept the revenue. Back to you, Mayor.
Very good. Any public testimony on this item?
I don't see anyone raising their hand there. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. Oh, okay. Yeah, I think we can proceed.
Okay, very good. Colleagues, any questions? Please call the roll on the state shared revenue ordinance.
Ryan.
Aye.
Hardesty.
Aye.
Maps.
Aye.
Rubio.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye, the ordinance is adopted. Next up, Director Kennard, the adopted budget ordinance.
That's right. So this next item is the adopted budget ordinance. It's the item that generates the most interest. I will open this item by describing at a high level the various adopted budget changes as filed. Next, the mayor will entertain motions from council to amend the budget. Then the mayor will call for public testimony. At the conclusion of testimony, council will vote on the individual amendments. This item has been filed without an emergency clause, which means under its current status, the final vote will be continued until next week. Following public testimony and voting on other amendments, council may choose to consider further amending the ordinance to add an emergency clause in order to vote on the budget adoption today. So I will now briefly describe the changes in the adopted budget as filed, which are changes reflected in Attachment B, also known as the change memo. These changes are technical changes to the budget. Most of them are technical adjustments to more accurately budget various grant and intergovernmental resources in the Bureau of Development Services, the Bureau of Transportation, and the Housing Bureau. There is also a technical true-up of funding for the remaining costs of the Portland Building Reconstruction Project, $75,000 reduction of charges for services in the environmental education program to reduce barriers to program access in Portland Parks and Recreation. And also the addition of two maintenance positions within the Golf Fund, which are funded through Golf Fund resources. Are there any questions that the council has on any of these adjustments? Hearing none, I will turn it back over to the mayor to entertain amendments.
All right, colleagues, we'll now entertain amendments to the budget. Each amendment, as usual, should note the amount, the bureau, the purpose, and the funding source. Each amendment should be moved and seconded for consideration. Then we'll hold public testimony before voting on the actual amendments. I would like to introduce an amendment on behalf of the council for non-represented employee merit and COLA. This amendment allocates funds for COLA and merit wage increases for non-represented employees in the coming fiscal year. I'd like to acknowledge and express my deep appreciation to our city employees for the sacrifice and dedication that they have shown over a very, very challenging year. I didn't think that offering this benefit would be financially feasible just a few months ago. So I'm very happy that we're able to identify resources to make that possible. So I would ask for, I will move that. I would ask for a second for
second.
That. I have a second from Commissioner Hardesty. We'll call that Mayor number one.
And I'm sorry, Mayor, but I believe you may have to actually read the language of the amendment, or I can do so if that's helpful. Keelan, is that right?
You want the whole thing? I can do that. You want it.
Keelan, do we need to read the actual text of the amendment into the record?
I'll defer to Lindley Reese, our council attorney, on this.
Oh, yes. Thank you.
I would appreciate it. And when you're talking about the whole thing, I don't know that you need to do all the text under the bolded. I don't know if that's what you're talking about, Jessica, at least the bolded language.
Okay. Well, here's what I show as bolded, and tell me if this is insufficient, and I'll add more if necessary. This is a motion to allocate $4,515,273 of one-time resources for non-represented employee cost of living and merit increases in fiscal year 21-22 and approve the updated salary rate tables. Is that sufficient?
It is for me. Jessica, does that work for you?
Yes, it does. We have the amendment language on file, and so that should work.
Fabulous. You just spared everybody a tremendous amount of grief. Great. So that is my amendment. Do we have other amendments that people would like to put on the table?
So, Mayor, I'm sorry, and it should be on video, it's easier. One of the things that is included in that under the non-bolded language is the actual language of the directive. And Jessica, did you intend that would be part of this motion? Because if we are, then you probably do need to read the new directive language, Mayor.
Here, I'll make it easy. I'll just read it. I was really trying to avoid this. I'll just read it. This is a motion to allocate $4,515,273 of one-time resources for non-represented employee cost of living and merit increases in fiscal year 21-22 and approve updated salary rate tables. Fund fiscal 21-22 increased wage costs for non-represented employees in general fund bureaus as follows. Increase grant revenue in the grant subfund associated with the American Rescue Plan Act by $2,909,403 and offset it with an increased cash transfer to the general fund. Increased policy set aside by $2,799,798 in one-time general fund resources to be available for general fund bureaus to request in the spring bump fiscal year 21-22, if required, to cover the costs of the non-represented merit and cost of living adjustments. Increase one-time general fund resources to council offices by $18,500 each, and to the mayor's office by $35,605 to cover the cost of merit increases for non-represented employees. Cost of living adjustments are already assumed in the fiscal year 2021-22 budget for these employees. Fund fiscal year 2021-22 increased wage costs for non-represented employees in the Bureau of Transportation and Development Services as follows. Increase grant revenue in the grant subfund associated with the American Rescue Plan Act by $1,605,870. Increase one-time general fund cash transfer to the Transportation Operating Fund by $1 $154,347 to cover costs associated with merit and cost of living adjustments for non-represented employees, increase one-time general fund cash transfers to the Development Services Fund by $451,523 to cover costs associated with merit and cost of living adjustments for non-represented employees. Update attachments B, C, D, and E as applicable. Additionally, amend the adopted budget ordinance to include the following directives.
And Mayor, I'm sorry to interrupt you. I think you have an old version. I just want you to read that first directive, Directive I.
Directive I. The council directs the addition of attachments F, G, and H, and that the salary rates for non-represented classifications be increased by 1.6% effective July 1st, 2021, as reflected in the attached exhibits F, G, and H, and the rates of pay of non-representative non-seasonal employees shall be increased by 1.6% within the constraints of the classification rates reflected in exhibits F, G, and H, and there will be a quiz later.
So I'm going to ask Jessica one really quick question, and otherwise, thank you for reading all of that. I appreciate it. Jessica, there were a couple of numbers that may have changed because of, are you comfortable with all the numbers that were there, or do we need to correct a few of them?
So let's just make sure that the grant revenue in the grant subfund associated with American Rescue Plan Act is $2,892,455,000. The increased policy set aside is $2,799,798. The one-time general fund increase resources to council offices is $15,233 each. And the mayor's office is $31,725 each. And I apologize for the complexity of this, but we will get the money where it needs to go.
Well, that's disappointing. I noticed the funds that go to my office actually shrunk under the way you read it. I like the way I read it much better. All right, good, thank you. So hopefully that passes everybody's muster. Commissioner Hardesty, you have an amendment or two you'd like to put on the table.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Director Kennard. I have two amendments that I would like to be considered today. The first motion is to allocate $450,000 of general fund one-time resources to the Bureau of Transportation and the Vision Zero program to support recommended high crash corridor safety interventions. Can I have a second?
I'll second it for discussion purposes.
Thank you. And should I read the whole thing?
I'll leave
might
that
as well,
to.
Because I don't want to have to fail the test with Lindley.
It's short, so why don't you read it?
Allocate $450,000 of one-time general fund as Bureau program expenses in the Portland Bureau of Transportation for Vision Zero recommended high crash corridor safety interventions. Funding for this allocation is provided through an increase in general fund resources from unspent policy set asides in fiscal year 2021. Updated attachments B, C, D, and E as needed to reflect this change.
All right, and so Commissioner Hardesty moves that. I second it. We'll call that Hardesty number one.
And Hardesty number two is a motion to reallocate $1 million from the $3.4 million graffiti allocation within the Office of Community and Civic Life to provide coordinated dumpster / garbage service for neighborhood and camp cleanups. If I could have a second.
I'll second that for discussion purposes. That's Hardesty two.
That concludes my amendments, Mayor.
All right, very good. Does anybody else have any amendments that they'd like to offer up? Seeing none, we'll take public testimony at this time. And I believe, Keelan, we have a few people at least signed up. Is that correct?
Yes, Mayor. We have four people on the line to testify.
Great. 3 minutes each, please. Name for the record.
First up, we have Mark Porras.
Welcome.
Hey, thanks for the opportunity to speak today. My name's Mark Porras. I live in Northeast Portland. I just heard the proposed amendments. I was hoping to speak in support of a resolution to fully fund Portland Street Response. at the amount that was originally requested by Commissioner Hardesty. But in the absence of that resolution, I kind of just want to make sure that I understand the City Council's reasoning. I just want to read this explanation that I got from Commissioner Mapps's office, which is funding is not the primary reason for the majority of council members voting no on this ordinance. Proper evaluation and setting up the program for success are the main concerns, not outsourcing. And I guess my question for the commissioners who are voting to not, or you know, who are not supporting fully funding Portland Street Response at this time is, like, how are you personally evaluating the Portland Police Bureau's success in dealing with people experiencing mental health crises? Yeah, that's all I have. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you.
Next up, we have Jennifer Kane.
Welcome.
Thank you so much. My name is Jennifer Chirkane, and I volunteer with an organization called 350 PDX, which is a climate change nonpartisan organization. We're looking at causes of climate disruption and working on justice-based solutions. Our organization was dismayed by the budget approved by the City Council on May 13th, as it fails to address the community's demands for systemic change and investments that will bring true community safety. The city has made numerous statements in the past in its commitment to community safety and intent to amend the injustices of the past. And we feel that this budget does not reflect the long and sustained protest for Black Lives Matter, calling for an end to violent and racist policing, nor does it prioritize the anticipated and unequal impact of climate change as has been laid bare through the COVID pandemic. The effects of climate change will most directly impact communities that are already being adversely affected by both the COVID pandemic and police violence. We urge the city to anticipate this impact and plan for it, as a delayed response will further exacerbate the disparities already experienced by communities of color, as well as low-income families. We urge you to move towards reparative justice and to take actions now to build systems of resilience by investing in critical social services and to reinforce the safety net of Portland's diverse communities and a solid plan and commitment to protect communities that have experienced historical displacement and a plan to ensure quality housing and resources in the adverse effects brought on by climate change. Specifically, the funding for the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability climate justice work is at a level insufficient to effectively implement the declarations outlined in the CED, the Climate Emergency Declaration, undercutting the city's ability to respond commensurate to the demands of the moment. Funding is needed to make good on the commitments outlined in the Climate Declaration. I'm sorry, was there a comment? Oh, okay. And then we want to see safeguards and transparency and reportability for the money spent in implementing the action items in the CED, which will require cross-functional collaboration among the commissioners and across bureaus. We must have assurance that the climate crisis issue does not become a political football that changes hands, picked up and then dropped, depending on the temperature of the commissioners in charge. And that should be anticipated. Thank you so much for the opportunity to give testimony.
Thank you, appreciate it.
Next up, we have M. Carter.
I'm gonna pass at this time, thank you.
Thank you.
And next we have Kathleen Jergen. Oh, no, I'm sorry, wait a minute. Yes, I'm sorry, Kathleen Jergen.
Yes, Mayor Wheeler, members of the City Council. I come before you today as somebody who's seriously wondering what's the point of coming before you here today. On April 16th, Portland police shot and killed a man across the street from my house. I apologize in advance, I'm a bit upset about this. His name was Robert Delgado. He was a loving father of four, and his only crime was being houseless and in mental health crisis. I can look out my living room window and literally see the spot where his body lay for 4.5 hours. My children and I were terrorized and traumatized that day, although this is nothing compared to what the Delgado family went through. So yeah, I'm here to talk to you about Portland Street Response, the program that might have saved Robert's life if it had been allowed to operate during the hours that people in my neighborhood actually have their mental health crises. The same program that 3 out of the 5 members of this council have decided not to allow to be fully implemented until some indefinite point in the future, because March of 2022 would have been too soon. Yes, I understand. Portland Street Response is still in the pilot stage. But with all the limitations that have been put on this program, not just its short hours, but the reluctance to let it be dispatched, I question whether this is even a good faith attempt at a pilot or whether the program is being set up to fail. So yeah, I'm here to support Portland Street Response. But I also think it's time to cut the crap when it comes to framing police reform as an aspirational goal only for the future. Because there are tools in your toolbox now that could have saved Robert Delgado's life that were not used. There have been promises made over literally decades regarding Portland police treatment of people labeled mentally ill. Promises that would have saved Robert Delgado's life if they had been kept. I'm old enough to remember Dickie Dow in 1998, Jose Mejia Pot in 2001, James Chassie in 2006, Aaron Campbell in 2010, Andre Gladden in 2019, and so many more. Why weren't things that the taxpayers have already spent millions of dollars on, things like the Enhanced Crisis Intervention Team, used on April 16th in my neighborhood? To a situation requiring a social worker, you all sent someone whose training was literally as an army sniper. I'm also going to give you 6 words. Do you see an orange tip? Robert Delgado's life could have been saved if that question had been asked by 911 dispatch on April 16th. No expensive new program required, just 6 one-syllable words. This is low-hanging fruit, folks. I've been coming to these meetings for decades now, and Commissioner Hardesty, you've been on the same side as me for a whole lot of those. I've seen very little actual change. We all know that there are angry young people in the streets right now who are being told to calm down and work within the system. City commissioners, I know some of you are new here, but the death of Robert Delgado cannot be blamed solely on your predecessors. It happened on your watch, all 5 of you. And I think it's on you to show us that working within the system actually accomplishes something other than empty promises and hopes for the future. Thank you.
Thank you. And personally, I hope to be able to show you that. Thank you for being here today. Next individual, please.
That completes testimony, Mayor.
Very good. Then testimony is closed. We will now hold discussion and votes on each amendment individually. With regard to the amendment that I put on the table as Mayor, one on behalf of the council, I know we have staff that's available to answer any questions that anybody may have on that particular amendment before we vote on it. Not seeing any questions, please call the roll.
Ryan.
Yes, thank you. I'm delighted that you could bring this amendment forward today. I vote aye.
Hardesty.
I ditto what Commissioner Ryan said. I vote aye.
Maps.
Aye.
Rubio.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. The amendment passes. The next one would be Commissioner Hardesty's. Her first one was the motion to allocate $450,000 towards Vision Zero.
Yes, Mayor, I'd like to do some introductory remarks and answer any questions my colleagues may have. Today, I introduced an amendment to urgently respond to the crisis of vehicular violence that has so far caused 25 traffic-related deaths on the streets of Portland this year. That represents a 47% increase in traffic deaths for 2021 compared to this date last year. It's clear our city is seeing a tragic increase in loss of life from traffic deaths, and we need to treat this like an emergency. Recently, I directed the Portland Bureau of Transportation to identify and plan out action that could be taken to provide safety improvements that can prevent traffic deaths as quickly as possible. This amendment includes ready-to-go action items proven to improve street safety that can be acted on within the next 4 to 6 months. These safety interventions will, in some cases, begin brand new projects while accelerating and enhancing other projects that were already in development. I admit this has been a very fast moving process. And so I wanted to make sure that my colleagues had some context for this amendment. On April 30th, we received an email highlighting the drastic increase in year-over-year traffic fatalities. Shortly after that, I directed PBOT to get me a list of life safety projects that could be built out in 4 to 6 months if we were able to identify funding. 3 weeks ago, I received this project list. 2 weeks ago, I received the list with my, I reviewed the list with my team and directed them to work to find ways to get them funded. Last week, the city budget office alerted my office to unallocated one-time funding for this budget process. My team hustled to put together an amendment that we could bring forward this week. The sooner we get this funded, the sooner we can address the disastrous rise in traffic fatalities. So the amendment details, the $450,000 in general funds will go to the Portland Bureau of Transportation for high crash quarter safety interventions, including speed safety cameras, installing additional cameras on high crash quarters to reduce high risk. Portland's existing cameras have reduced overall speed by an average of 71% and top end speeds decreased by 94% compared with the period before those were in place. Increased safety and visibility at intersections on high crash quarters. Pull parking further from the intersection. Sometimes it's called daylighting. Many times big vehicles park at the end of the street, which prevents visibility for folks that are trying to turn. So we would be installing signals that give pedestrians a head start to help people see each other and avoid crashes. Nearly 3/4 of pedestrian crashes occur at intersections in Portland. In addition, we would be providing turn calming infrastructure. We would add the small rubber bumps to high crash intersections that help left turning drivers see and avoid pedestrians in the crosswalk. 20% of pedestrian crashes result from left turning drivers failing to yield to pedestrians in the crosswalk at signalized intersections. Center turn lane delineation. Install flexible posts to help prevent misuse of open center turn lanes approaching major intersections, which can increase the risk of crashes. Speed limit reductions. Speed limits are a proven tool in supporting safer speeds. Speed is a major factor in nearly half of the Portland traffic deaths. High crash intersection warning signs. Installing high visibility signs about traffic safety risks at intersections on Portland's high crash network. In conclusion, I just want to say it is critical to focus on high crash quarters. While they make up only 8% of Portland streets, high crash streets consistently account for the majority of traffic deaths. In 2020, 62% of Portland's 54 traffic deaths occurred on high crash quarters, and they account for the majority of traffic deaths so far this year as well. These high crash streets are disproportionately in East Portland and generally in areas with higher rates of people living on low incomes and people who are Black, Indigenous, and other communities of color. The death rate from traffic crashes among Black residents in Multnomah County was nearly twice the rate among white residents during the period 2013 to 2017, according to a recent Multnomah County study. This morning, we heard some passionate students about their desire to see safer streets and sidewalks around the city of Portland. I also heard from my colleagues that they were interested in finding ways to make our transportation system safer. This is such an opportunity, and a time for action is now. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Hardesty. Commissioner Mapps.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you, Commissioner Hardesty. I actually have a question or two for the budget director, if I may. Director Kennard, does the budget office have any recommendations on these proposals?
So our office does not typically analyze. We don't have time to conduct analysis or recommendations on amendment proposals. What I can say around the funding source, I can say that I can confirm that this is a funding source that is available through one-time policy set aside that would otherwise fall to balance and be available for the council to appropriate in the fall.
In the fall. Okay. Thank you very much. And I believe if I remember correctly, the budget office essentially ranks infrastructure projects by their urgency. Do you have any sense of where these projects fall in terms of the capital projects that we have in the pipeline or on our wish list?
So Commissioner, I think you're referring to our capital set aside process, and we have a fairly detailed cost benefit analysis process where we rely on a lot of data that's pulled by bureaus. This project was not evaluated through that process that I'm aware of, but I believe we actually have some bureau representatives on the line that might be able to speak more to that. I think the primary source for the Vision Zero type, we have capital set aside resources that sometimes go to fund these types of projects, but we also have, I believe, some cannabis resources that also fund some of the Vision Zero work as well. With regards to sort of the data and the evaluation, the cost benefit analysis, I would have to defer to the Bureau.
Is there someone on the Bureau here who can dig in?
Yes, Dana Dickman is here to answer any questions that you may have.
Sure.
Hi,
Dana.
Hi.
So I have a couple of questions. I'm trying to figure out, you know, let me say, I don't question the value of any of these individual projects. One of the things that I'm having a problem with is the process. Typically when we're making budget decisions, especially on infrastructure stuff, we have these projects placed into context and we're comparing them against different investments that we might make. I know that also that PBOT has billions of dollars in projects in the pipeline. I'm just trying to figure out, I need more context in order to kind of
I think in terms of context for what this means for Vision Zero and safety work, we do still need to invest in those large capital projects that you're talking about, those major street redesigns, those corridors that Commissioner Hardesty is referencing. Those need the multi-million dollar street redesign. This money and this ask is really about addressing the huge spike in crashes that we have and looking at ways where we can tactically make safe systems changes right now. We know that things like slowing speeds work. We know that the left turn calming works because we've done it and we did analysis on it and we saw that it slowed speeds. So these projects wouldn't necessarily be evaluated against those large capital projects because they're these tactical interventions at intersections, at specific locations. And as Commissioner Hardesty said, with an emphasis on what can we do now to save lives this summer and in the next 6 months. We know that it's going to take us a long time to rebuild those streets. What can we do quickly to kind of change the dynamic of what's happening on our streets right now?
Well, I hear that and some of that makes a lot of sense to me, but you know, I think the rise in traffic fatalities has hardly been a secret. So Dana, can you tell me why this wasn't part of the regular budget process and regular budget request?
I think Commissioner Hardesty addressed that part of what we're trying to do with this is accelerate some work. So things like the vision clearance, we have funds already in our budget to do about 200 intersections. The funds will allow us to do more and will allow us to do it faster. So we didn't actually know that this budget was available. And what we were asked by our commissioner was to really look at what can we do to deal with this issue. If there is money available, can we accelerate some of the things that we know are proven metrics? And that's why the list you're seeing is what it is, because we know those things work and we know we can deliver them quickly. So it's not like these are new issues. They're things that we're working on, and these funds will help us to accelerate the work and do more of it.
Well, I think of a budget as being sort of a work plan for a coming year. So I don't understand why this wasn't kind of integrated into your work plan.
So again, I will take that one on, Commissioner. As you know, budgets are submitted in January. It was April 30th that I was notified of the significant increase in deaths due to vehicle homicides. And I directed my bureau to start identifying how we could address that issue, right? So, and as you know, we had a very limited pot of dollars that we got to allocate through this budget process. So the timing became the real issue, right? These are issues, as Dana said, that we work on every single day. So nothing's new about the issues that we're working on and the safety improvements that we're making. What's new is that since April, we've had significant increase in people dying because of unsafe streets. We cannot rebuild all the streets at the same time. So my bureau did, as we're directed, come up with a list, tell us what you could do in the next 4 to 6 months. I didn't say how many people's lives we could save in 4 to 6 months if we did these improvements, but clearly these are improvements that have been proven to work and they've been proven to save lives. And so if there's extra money in this year's budget, if there's an opportunity to actually put these improvements in place over the next 4 to 6 months, that's why I took advantage of the opportunity once I heard about the resources that were available. And you are absolutely right. This is certainly not how we normally do the budget, but you know, since I've been here, we haven't actually had a normal budget process. So budgets change based on what's taking place in our community today. And so this was an opportunity to be proactive with some limited resources that were only available, that just became available. So.
Thank you, Commissioner Hardesty. And I appreciate it, these particular infrastructure projects you want to do. I'm confident they're going to work. I do have to say, I want to say to you and I want to say to my colleagues that I'm really uncomfortable with this project. I think we could each look, or uncomfortable with the process. I think that we could each look into our own bureaus and identify places where with an extra $400,000 or whatnot, we could make a huge difference in the lives of Portlanders. And I just feel like I'm not set up well today to make a truly informed decision. I'll also tell you, I'm probably going to vote for this, but I hope that we don't repeat this process again. Thank you.
Very good. Any further questions? Seeing none, please call the roll.
Ryan.
Yes, thank you, Commissioner Hardesty, for bringing this forward and for the thoughtful dialogue that just took place. You know, Vision Zero was a really big proclamation. And what I can see, and I don't see as much as you do, Commissioner Hardesty, because that's not the bureau that I'm zeroed in on, but it seems like it also was a pretty big unfunded mandate. And I think it's really important that we continue to, I mean, earlier today, we had a project that was, you know, I said, you had me at Vision Zero. And I think I've said this many times because I did a lot of work in my last job out in East Portland early in the morning. And I can't tell you how many times I was worried I was going to run into somebody because of the dark streets at 7:30 a.m. in the winter, wet streets, and lack of infrastructure surrounding it. So I've never been surprised that we've had a lot of accidents and deaths out in that part of town. So I understand the uncomfortableness with the process, and I also get the urgency for this issue. It's a community priority, and any investments we can make, any action we can take. So my hope here is that the PBOT does some agile adjusting so that we really do target this and move the work along at a speed that we're usually not used to in the city of Portland. I just use the word speed at an accelerated a level that we're not used to. Anyway, that's my way of saying aye.
Hard to see.
This is important for people who live, work, worship in East Portland. Who take their life into their own hands every day when they're on the streets. We are headed into summer months and we are all being released from 15 months of house arrest. People are on our streets more today, and it is us, the city, that has not built the infrastructure in East Portland. It is inexcusable to continue to see the data and know that people are dying because of poor infrastructure and not try to do everything we possibly can to save lives. I am really happy that each of my colleagues, we had one-on-one conversations about this amendment. I appreciate your thoughtful questions. I appreciate the fact that this is a emergency. We are in an emergency when it comes to folks living in communities with very poor public infrastructure and their life being at risk using streets that should make all of us feel safe. So thank you, colleagues, and I vote aye.
Maps.
I've had my staff look at these individual projects and they reassure me that they will contribute to traffic safety. And for those reasons, I am going to vote aye. At the same time, I think members of council and staff have heard my concerns with this process. I believe in order for me to be effective in this position, it's important that this council participate in good planning, good prioritization, and have clear processes. I think that in many ways, this particular project came to us in a way that did not embody those values. I have concerns with that, and I think I have some limits in terms of how far I can support a flawed process. But today, these projects are compelling enough that I will vote aye. But as we move forward, I hope that we can avoid, we can find maybe clearer and more timely processes. So with that, I will vote aye.
Rubio.
Thank you, Commissioner Hardesty, for bringing this forward. And thank you to my colleagues for the dialogue in this. And one thing that I'm definitely learning about in my first 6 months here on council is that, you know, more time is always better. And sometimes we don't have the time. And sometimes we have to act urgently or recalibrate quickly. And so the reason this is something I'm going to support is because it does involve saving lives right now. And that should always be our priority. And so those reasons, I'm very supportive. I'm supportive of making some strides forward on Vision Zero as well. With that, I vote aye.
Wheeler.
I vote aye. The amendment is adopted. To Commissioner Hardesty's number two, this is a reallocation of $1 million from the graffiti allocation within the Office of Community and Civic Life.
That is correct, Mayor. I'll speak to the amendment. The amendment would reallocate $1 million from the 3.4 million graffiti allocation within the Office of Community and Civic Life to provide coordinated dumpster and garbage service for neighborhood and community camp cleanups. During this budget process, we've heard calls from the community for increased trash and dumpster services to benefit all Portlanders, both housed and unhoused. I've also been meeting regularly with neighborhood associations since January when I took charge of the Office of Community and Civic Life. And what I hear over and over and over again, neighborhood associations, business groups, faith organizations do garbage cleanups every week. They're doing them on a regular basis. Some are more organized than others, but the biggest expense is cutting away the garbage and the trash. And I've heard this over and over again. So what I want to assure the council is this is not about not doing graffiti removal. We will continue to do graffiti removal, but I wanted a council vote so that we'd have some flexibility with this $1 million to actually be able to help people be able to clean up trash and bring dumpsters in as neighborhood associations and other community partners needed it. And so that's the reasoning behind this amendment.
Yeah, Commissioner Rubio, then I have a question.
Thank you, Mayor. And thank you, Commissioner Hardesty, for that intro. And I know that our staffs have spoken to each other of late about this. And so I just want to, with some of our questions about this, and I just want to make sure that I'm clear in understanding you. So As you know, my concerns stem from that 3.4 and making sure that we had that available for graffiti removal, both for public use, but also for other reasons as well. And just so that I'm clear, that this flexibility means that there's flexibility, but it's not a hard line. Is that correct?
That is correct. So it may not even get close to $1 million, but I just thought having the flexibility to be able to use some of those dollars for what community-based organizations are telling me is their biggest need, right? When you think about folks who are already organized that are doing good community support, this is what I've heard consistently from every neighborhood association I've spoken to.
Okay. Thank you.
And so they're both. It's not an either or, it's both.
Okay. So I'd like to chime in. First of all, I agree completely that we need to do a better job of cleaning up litter through an organized effort at homeless camps in the city of Portland. You have no disagreement with me on that. I'm 100% supportive of that. I'm also 100% opposed to reducing the budget for graffiti abatement. And I think I've expressed my concerns on that front. The 3.4 was created based on input from those who actually do the work in terms of what we thought would be required. I am very open to the idea of using ARPA dollars for the purpose of working with you and others on the council and others in the community to help keep the camps clean. But I do not want to rob Peter to pay Paul in this case. It's very important to me that we maintain the graffiti budget as a separate line item.
Well, thank you for that, Mayor. I'm kind of disappointed in that because, as you know, I mean, you clean graffiti, it's back the next day. You clean up trash, a community looks better. And we have to do both. I mean, it's not an either or.
I agree, but
that was just a proposal and, everybody gets to either support it or not, but I just thought this money was allocated and 3.7 million just feels like, 3.4 million feels like an awful lot of money for graffiti removal. When again, that's not what neighbors are telling me when I go to neighborhood association meetings every single week. They're telling me that it's the garbage that's making them batty, not the graffiti.
I think it's both. I would argue that we should do both. And so my request to you is work with me on the ARPA dollars. Let's put together a thoughtful program to actually abate litter at camps, both sanctioned and unsanctioned. I agree with you that that's what the public wants, that they also want the graffiti abated. So I'm just saying, let's do both. Let's not split the funds and do inadequately on both. Let's actually put together robust programs for both.
So Mayor, what I'm hearing you is that you're proposing a partnership around how do we access some ARPA dollars
It would be an entirely appropriate use. We know homelessness has exploded during the pandemic for a variety of reasons. We know that one of the main reasons people are upset about the explosion of camping throughout the city is some of the livability issues. You know that I worked with council to put 78 hygiene stations throughout the city, hand washing stations, toilets. We've been working with private sector partners on mobile laundry. It makes sense. And I know that Hucker already works with camps to help them keep their camps clean, but I think we can do a much better job. And I'd absolutely work with you on through the ARPA funding to do that. Absolutely, I would. But I really don't want to dip into the graffiti abatement budget. To get it in, and I want to keep it there.
Let me just say that I will withdraw my amendment because I have the mayor on the public record that he's going to work with me to find an additional resources to assist our community, all over the community, with community cleanup. So I withdraw this amendment, and we can just move on.
All right, so we're there. Did anybody else have anything they wanted to say on that point before Commissioner Hardesty and I did our thing? We did that thing we do.
You did. I think we were obviously gonna have longer conversations about this. So I appreciate where the two of you landed. It was really good theater and I'm all in.
All right, awesome, good. Thank you, Commissioner Hardesty, for withdrawing the amendment. I appreciate it. I look forward to continuing to work with you and the other council members on the ARP allocation. So colleagues, I don't want to be presumptuous, but if we're all on board with the amendments that we have now approved, we could add another amendment to add an emergency clause to adopt the budget today, but I don't want to presume that. Commissioner Hardesty?
Mayor, I would like to move that we add an emergency clause to the budget vote today.
Is there anybody who would oppose that, I guess is what I want to say. I'm not seeing any head nods, so I will second that, because it's obviously if we add the emergency clause, then it has to be a unanimous vote. And I'm feeling that vibe here, but I didn't want to. So I will second that. Any further discussion on the addition of an emergency clause? Please call the roll.
Lindley has a question.
So Mayor and or Commissioner Hardesty, could you please state a reason for the record for the emergency?
I'll go ahead and do it. I've got it right in front of me. The council declares that an emergency exists because it's necessary to adopt the budget and establish appropriations without delay in order to provide authority to transact the financial affairs of the city for fiscal year 2021-22. Therefore, this ordinance shall be in full force and effect from and after July 1st, 2021. Please call the roll.
Ryan.
Aye.
Hardesty.
Aye.
Maps.
Aye.
Rubio.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. The emergency clause is added. Colleagues, now that we've added the emergency clause, I'm now seeking a motion to adopt the budget as amended. Wait, we don't need, do we need a motion?
No.
I don't think we do.
No, because it's the ordinance.
Keila call it. Okay, good. Yeah, so it's this is the big show. Colleagues, this is the vote to adopt the budget as amended. Keila, please call the roll.
Ryan.
Okay, well, thank you, Mayor. And sorry, I feel like I've been going first for more than 3 months, but anyway, here we go. Thank you, Mayor, for that amendment. I'm glad we're doing this today, actually. I would like to take this opportunity to say how much I appreciate my colleagues. Last fall, the council committed to identify three priorities for this budget process. And in January, the current council confirmed these priorities: houselessness, economic stability, and community safety. Over the course of the last 6 months, we all stayed disciplined and focused. And while identifying our priorities was the right place to start, I'm also attached to the actions that we directly reflect and advance our shared priorities and how we advance our shared priorities. The shared dedication to this action is an important step to move away from the protective silo stance that I think has haunted our form of government for years. First, I want to highlight our action on houselessness. The council unanimously approved the shelter to housing continuum this spring, a vital step that allows us to collaborate with the Office of Management and Finance to create 6 safe rest restorative villages for unhoused neighbors by the end of this year. My team leads the work through a weekly Streets to Stability task force with policy staff from all 5 offices, which is key, all 5 offices, thank you. Members of the impact reduction team, my new name for Hucker, and leadership from the Joint Office of Homeless Services. Together, they share ideas, accountability, opportunities, and credit for results and impact. Currently, they are finalizing a safe rest ordinance, which I will bring to the council later this month. I can't overstate what a huge step in the right direction these 6 restorative villages will be for our community. We need to meet our unhoused neighbors where they are, and we need to provide safe places to rest with full access to services that every person needs: food, laundry, toilets, showers. And with sustained partnership from our partners at the county, we must provide access and services for the many complex challenges that each of our houseless residents face. The end goal is we will have a permanent, we'll have permanent housing for all Portlanders. That will always be the end goal. And this initiative will make Portland safer, healthier, and better prepared to lead our community out of the houselessness crisis. I want to thank my colleagues for supporting my amendment for the project director position to move this work and to get the results that Portlanders deserve. And I want to thank the Community Advance for your support of these villages. So many Portlanders have been calling for this action for so long, and I look forward to sharing milestones with you that we all will share along the way. Second, in our action on economic stability, this council offered enthusiastic support for the assembly of a permit improvement task force convened by my team with the partnership with Commissioner Mapps. Thank you, Commissioner Mapps, for joining those meetings. While the Bureau of Development Services is a face in permitting in Portland, there are 7 bureaus involved in development review. Count them, 7. It's far past time to acknowledge that development review and permitting are not one office's responsibility. And I appreciate my colleagues sharing this view and for your office's engagement. The Permit Improvement Task Force includes directors and staff from every bureau involved with the development review. And their goal is to improve efficiency and quality in our permit processes. The task force is currently building out a work plan for our first objective to improve the quality of submittals. This just in, the customer is not always wrong. This, like most improvements, begins with acceptance and humility. I want to appreciate the task force members for the dialogue on this topic, because all improvement really does begin with culture change. And again, I want to thank my colleagues for supporting this amendment to hire a project manager who will lead this work. While I know permitting isn't always the most exciting topic, it is vital to make these processes more accessible as our economy recovers and thrives. The work will make it easier to build affordable housing, create shelters for our houseless neighbors, improve sidewalks, repair your home, launch your small businesses, or build an ADU in your backyard. Permitting impacts every Portlander, and it's time to make these processes work for every Portlander, not just those with the most access. I'm also pleased that this budget includes Portland Housing Bureau funding for the North Northeast Preference Policy. This investment will give priority for affordable housing investments to Black Portlanders with generational ties to the area, who have been displaced or at risk of displacement now, or who have been descendants of households displaced from North and Northeast Portland. As we work to correct past harms and provide restorative economic justice that benefits our entire community, I expect to see the North and Northeast preference policy create meaningful progress for more Portlanders. I also want to highlight the Housing Bureau's funding for inclusionary housing market study. We really need data and analysis to advance ongoing refinements to our inclusionary housing program incentives and requirements. And the study will give us the tools we need to realize truly inclusionary housing in Portland. I want to thank our partners on the ground who will be at the table with us. I also want to tell them we don't need a Portland Nice meeting on this one. We need robust, positive tension. If there isn't creative tension at these meetings, I don't think we'll create anything new and different or better. I'd like to thank my colleagues once more for supporting the amendments that can move this work forward. And third, our action related to community safety. It's a critical time for our city. This council unanimously passed a gun violence ordinance and invested in Portlanders to build trust in culturally specific communities. On the ground, community organizations are best positioned to lead this work, and our investments reflect that commitment to proven solutions. And I also just want to say how important it is in building that trust so that we see the clearance rate of all crime cases go up, because that will mean that trust has gone up. And despite our differing views on the timeline for expansion, I know that all 5 council members have expressed and truly want to fully support Portland Street Response. We all agree on the need for the first responder program that meets people where they are and when they are experiencing behavioral health crises. Portland Street Response reflects that approach, and I look forward to learning more as the objective data comes in. Thank you to the team of Portland Street Response who are doing this work every day and are part of this courageous pilot. I recognize how challenging your roles are, and I really appreciate your service. Our next critical action is to follow the lead of the newly hired Community Safety Director, Mike Myers. We need at least one or more work sessions with potential mental health partners who can help us identify scalable solutions. Oregon's last in the nation behavioral health practices are an embarrassment, and this antiquated system directly contributes to our houselessness crisis and to the overall community safety. While the city doesn't have the authority over our statewide system or even our county services, I believe we can find creative solutions through collaboration, and we will work to address the damaging gap and move Oregon's behavioral health practices into the 21st century. And like all good solutions, they must come from the ground up. I'd like to ask every Portlander to stay focused with us on these shared priorities and our shared actions. This last year and a half has challenged each and every one of us in so many ways. We are all on a path of emotional and spiritual recovery. Portland, we can do this. We can share our resources in a way that reflects our values, and we can continue to learn from one another, and we can move Portland forward together. I would like to thank my council colleagues and also my county colleagues and all the incredible staff that you've hired. I value your perspective and commitment to do this work, and I appreciate how collaborative your teams have been throughout this process. I also would like to give a special thanks to Tom Reinhart in advance for his leadership for housing and managing the positions that will advance these pivotal initiatives forward. As you can see, I don't want to build programs in my office, but I do want to have a dotted line to make sure that implementation truly happens. Thank you also to Director Kennard and her team. This budget process was the first for most of us, and your stewardship and patience was so appreciated. And finally, I want to just take a moment at this very important time to thank my team. Kelly Torres, Chief of Staff, you keep us all together. Housing and Budget and Business and BDS is Charity Montez. Everything around houselessness, Mark Bond, you guide us. And for Council Prep and Constituent Relations, as well as the Children's Levy and Rose Festival, it's Yesenia Carrillo. And keeping us on time and organized, Elizabeth Gadberry. And then finally, to try to help us communicate clearly and connect all the dots, Margo Week. 2021 is about action. And as a member of this team, I'm excited to take Portland to a new direction with all of you. I love my city and I know you love it too. Let's do this. I vote aye.
Courtesy.
I want to start by thanking members of the public who wrote letters, came and testified, contacted other offices about our shared disappointment that Portland Street Response Pilot was not fully funded in this budget process. But I want to tell the public who believes in Portland Street Response that I haven't given up. Portland Street Response is not dead. It will flourish and it will grow. And you will be hearing more about how that will happen in the near future. This budget for me represents two Portlands. It represents a Portland that's ready to flip the switch and go back to life as normal. Go to work, go have fun, hang out in restaurants and bars and just pretend the last 15 months didn't happen. And then it represents the other Portland that has been economically devastated by COVID and all the policies that did not provide equal access and opportunity and benefit to so many Portlanders. What we've learned over the last 15 months is that we don't all experience Portland the same. Some of us experience a very engaging, inclusive, fabulous Portland. Others of us struggle to keep a roof over our heads, struggle to feed our kids, struggle to get a quality education. So when I looked at this budget and I look at the work we're doing around the reinvestment dollars, we're certainly doing some good things. we're making some good investments. We're making investments in people. That's reflected both in the resolution earlier this year around investing in community-based organizations that deal directly with families experiencing violence. The community has demanded that we do a lot of transformation when it comes to policing. This budget doesn't reflect that, but I also don't want the public to think that we're not doing a lot today as it relates to policing. We are. And what we're doing is we're in the process now of actually seating the police commission, which we have funded a staff position that will lead that effort. This budget also reflects a desire to both fulfill our requirements under the DOJ settlement agreement and to start putting us on a path to reimagining what community safety looks like. Mike Myers, I am very grateful that we were able to finally hire Mike Myers to lead that effort. But I also want to say that when we flip the switch, we will have people who've been unemployed for over a year. We'll have people on July 1st receiving eviction notices. We have people who will be struggling for years to come, and it will be reflected in the new people that will be living on our streets, in their automobiles, in their RVs. So we are two cities. The question is, how do we become one city? This budget, in my mind, reinforces this two cities that Portland is. One is a prosperous part of Portland that just wants to just go back to normal. There's so many of our community that would love to go back to normal, but their normal is radically different and will be for years to come. Commissioner Ryan, I look forward to hearing about your four camp project. I don't know the details. What I know is we're gonna need a lot more than four, because we're gonna have a lot more houseless people in our community. Okay, six, my bad, six. But I need to know more about that, because what I know is that it's not as bad as it's gonna get. And I am very concerned at this budget and actually invest in more in status quo than it does in addressing actually the critical needs that will be on now. Only time will tell if that's true. But what I can say is there are some good investments. We were able to finally, after 2 years, get the Ankeny food cuts up and operational. Don't know why it took 2 years, but I know those small business owners are gonna be really thrilled that they will have the opportunity to feed their families. I'm terrified of what the next year will be, because what I'm seeing is this real divide in this community between people who want to go back to status quo, everything's normal, and those who are truly suffering on our street. I hope that as this budget is implemented, that we are very aware that this budget is going to have an impact on every single man, woman, and child who lives, works, and worships in the city of Portland. I look forward to having that board conversation with the county, because I certainly wanna know what the county is gonna pay for and what the city is gonna pay for. What we've done as far as the joint office is inadequate. It is unacceptable. So I look forward to a year of really hard, hard choices and making sure that if we're investing limited dollars, we're actually investing in it in people that are in desperate need in our community. So I'm reluctantly voting aye, but it's not my aspirational budget, but it is the budget that we have. I vote aye.
Maps.
Aye.
Rubio.
I'd like to begin by thanking all the community members and staff who helped bring us to this point. And thanks to Director Kennard and everyone in the City Budget Office for their countless hours helping us build this budget, explain the budget, and also answer the many questions my staff had as we participated in our first city budget process. I also want to appreciate the mayor's efforts and those of my colleagues for their thoughtfulness in this budget and prioritization during another incredibly challenging budget year. I'd also like to just state also that while I'm disappointed that we didn't find common ground on Portland street response, I know that we all agree that Portland Street response is absolutely needed and that we share a desire to continue working to make it a full partner in our public safety system. And I'm very hopeful that we can do this sooner rather than later, and look forward to seeing Commissioner Hardesty's next steps on that. As my first budget in this role, I'm very happy that we landed with a budget that prioritizes our council priorities and lays important groundwork for economic recovery and the federal support of the ARP that we're discussing even as we speak. We need to remember the things we've experienced and learned during the last 16 months and the existing deep disparities that this pandemic has made more visible. This is where our work is, and I think what I will be focusing on over the next year plus, and also on our role in creating a thriving, healthy, safe, and engaged community for all Portlanders where we leave no one behind. And finally, I want to thank again my colleagues for their thoughtful, critical dialogue and the learning that I've gleaned from that as well. I want to thank the mayor and Commissioner Hardesty for being the senior members of council and for your patience and explanations in our new roles. And also I want to thank my new colleagues for also our learning together and helping me feel like that I'm not the only one and that it's okay to ask questions sometimes and slow down. And of course, each of our staffs are just so, have been so great and tremendous and work very well together. And for me, especially my policy team, Rico, Lujan, Cynthia Castro, Mona Schwartz, and Adriana Miranda, who do such an amazing job on all behalf of all of us and in service to all Portlanders. And I'm talking about all of our staff. So with that, I'm very excited to vote aye on my first budget.
Miller.
I want to start by thanking my colleagues, Commissioner Hardesty, Commissioner Rubio, Commissioner Ryan, Commissioner Mapps. This has been a much better process for your direct engagement, your thoughtfulness, and your innovation. And I appreciate that. I also want to acknowledge somebody who's not here, Kristen Dennis, my former chief of staff, started working on this budget just shy of 1 year ago and put a lot of blood, sweat, and tears into it, as did many members of the mayor's office. That the work they did was alongside the work that all of you did and the work that your staffs did. This, under this form of government, a budget cannot be created without collaboration. It's like an escape room. I often liken it to that. Everybody's got a piece of the puzzle. Nobody has the whole plan. And so it's really dependent upon all of us to be able to work together and collaborate. That does not mean we have to agree. In fact, I think for the purposes of a democracy where there are only five of us representing a constituency that's the better part of a million people, I think it would be unhealthy if we agreed on everything, frankly. But I am glad that at the end of the day, we communicated, we made important compromises, we made commitments to the future, and we got to 5-0. And I will tell you that that does not always happen, having now put the lid on my fourth budget. So I'm really glad that this crew was able to work well together and make that happen. I want to thank Director Kennard and her entire team for the many, many hours that they put into the budget. They're getting ready to wind up and start again. Presumably tomorrow. Well, they still have to put this one to bed. There's a lot of legal steps that we don't have to deal with that they do. But I want to thank you, Director, and I want to thank your team for their incredible work. I want to thank our Bureau Directors. Our Bureau Directors spent just an incredible amount of time and energy putting their individual budgets together. And this year, there was an unprecedented amount of collaboration between bureaus and bureau directors. And I want to acknowledge that. I think that was great that they did that. I want to also just acknowledge the impact of this budget vote. As some of you said, and I think rightly, this has been a year plus unlike any other. It's been a year of incredible personal and economic and societal hardships. The end of this fiscal year coincides with what I think is an important moment in the transition of this city. With rising vaccination rates, we're seeing our city finally beginning to emerge from the COVID-19 pandemic and some of its associated struggles. And I don't think it takes a genius to say this past year has tested our city, perhaps more than any other city in the United States. We certainly get the lion's share of attention, including this morning on the cover of the New York Times. Again, COVID-19 took the lives of hundreds of Portlanders, and we can't forget that. And the city had a role to play early in the physical aspects of the pandemic. The restrictions that kept us safe forced many of our businesses to close. Many of our nonprofits weren't able to continue to operate. All of us found ourselves in some way isolated from our family, from our friends, from our neighbors, and frankly, for the safety of the entire community. Our city was also the site of an incredible push for racial justice. Thousands of Portlanders gathered last summer to make it clear that Black lives matter. This movement underlines the work ahead of us, ensuring that our city is equitable and safe for everyone. And I want to acknowledge something Commissioner Hardesty said that struck me as important, which is, you know, there are items in this budget that do directly relate to police reform, but there is a lot of work that is being done that has nothing to do with budgets. It has to do with values, it has to do with leadership, it has to do with recruiting and retention and training, and ultimately accountability. And this council has taken a significant unified step forward when it comes to the issue of accountability in particular. We want to make sure that our city is equitable and that it is safe for everyone. The lessons from the past year have shaped this budget, and this budget serves as a tool, I believe, to positively move the city forward. It's going to help us provide shelter to people who are living outside. It's going to support small businesses as they seek to reopen. It's going to reshape our public safety system. It's going to increase our city's livability. It's going to improve diversity and equity and inclusion within the city of Portland itself. And in that regard, it's an important step forward. And I want to thank my colleagues in particular for that. I vote aye. The budget is adopted as amended. Thank you for your hard work. Commissioner Hardesty.
Thank you, Mayor. I just was really an idiot and did not thank my brilliant staff. And so if I could just take a moment and thank Kristen Johnson, who's my budget director, who's just the most fabulous person when it comes to knowing the city's budget, and Derek Bradley, my policy guru director as well. And Carly Edwards, who is a smart woman and on leave today, taking some much needed vacation. I have an incredible staff, and Jessica Kennard, I just want you to know your office is absolutely superb. You and your team, it just boggles the mind how you're able to do what you can do with five bosses and never not smile and be just so gracious with all of us. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Hardesty. So with that, Director Kennard, the final item is the tax levies ordinance.
That's right. So we now have one final item to consider to adopt the budget, and it's the adopting the tax levy ordinance. This action includes the levy amounts for property taxes accruing to the general fund, the Parks 2020 Local Option Levy Fund, the Children's Investment Fund, and the Fire and Police Disability and Retirement Fund. It also includes property tax levies for general obligation bonded debt and 15 urban renewal areas. Mayor, I will turn it over to you to call for testimony.
All right, and I in turn will turn it over to Keelan to ask if there is any testimony on this item.
No one is raising their hand for this item.
Very good. Colleagues, any questions before we call the roll? Very good. Please call the roll on the tax levies ordinance.
Ryan.
Aye.
Hardesty.
Aye.
Maps.
Aye.
Rubio.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. The ordinance is adopted. So, Director Kennard, I believe that completes our business for this afternoon. Is that correct?
It does. Thank you all.
All right. Well done, everybody. Thank you. Appreciate it. We are adjourned.